We're doing the Avat Chesed, and I'm sorry, the Sefer Amidot. We're up to page Shin Bet, and the Magen Midivna had discussed that pride stems from a person taking credit for things that are not his own doing, different gifts that God gives him, and when a person has that pride, so then he looks down at others who do not have the gifts he has, and he also considers himself greater than others. And that's the first issue, that's an outgrowth of pride. And the second is that a person takes himself so seriously. He thinks he's so great, so he should really have everything good, and he feels like, why don't I have everything I want? And then he's willing to do everything. He's willing to fight tooth and nail to attain things that are he really doesn't deserve. So again, through pride, a person likes himself, honors himself, and puts down others. And through pride, a person also feels like he is deserving of many things in this world that really he has no right to. And these two things really are outgrowths of the same root. A root that bears fruit that is bitter and poisonous. These two aspects really unite in their activities, in their thought and their evil doing. So when a person is has the traits, so then he obligates himself. When a person is missing the traits, he seeks for himself, and he's going to explain. You have two types of people. Remember, we said there's a person who has gifts, and he looks down at other people because they don't have it. And then you have a person who doesn't have gifts, but he still has arrogance. Remember, yesterday we discussed sometimes a person's handicapped. And because he is lacking, so he has this false pride, he can have this arrogance in the way he treats other people, and it actually stems from the cover-up for what he's missing. Like the example we discussed about the sons of the maids, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, where they had extra pride, specifically because they had no right to have extra pride. So those are the two aspects he was discussing. There's a person who has pride because he actually was given a gift and he doesn't realize that it's not his own doing. He takes credit for it and looks down at others. And then you have a person who looks down at others to cover up for what he's really missing. And these two stem from the same place. There's really not a great difference between them. They're both headed in the same direction, to take pride, to take control of other people, to be demanding of other people. They want to make other people subservient to them, to do their work, to carry their load. They want people to honor them and exalt them. They want people to seat them with the elders. They view themselves as though their existence is indispensable. The world wouldn't manage without me. And so they think that all glory and greatness and honor, all praise should be aimed at them because they are God's gift to mankind. And they think, when we're not here, everyone should be looking for us. How do they manage without us? Because who else would they exalt and praise if not them? So,
the world is turning around them. Like, instead of
egocentric.
Yeah.
So we all start out being completely egocentric, and we have a hard time outgrowing it.
Yeah.
we outgrow the degree. The question is, to what degree? I'll give you an example. If you would walk into this classroom, and I'd have a look on my face that said I was really upset. So chances are the first thought you'd have is he upset at me? The fact that I'm upset, does it have anything to do with you? You walk out to pay your bill at the makolet, and the guy behind the counter barks at you. So you ask yourself, did I do anything wrong? Why? He's barking. What does it have to do with me? But our first thought is that whatever we see around us is reflective on us. And people can attribute it to very religious things. Like, there's Ashgacha, and obviously I was meant to have this guy behind the counter, so obviously I'm supposed to do something. People can take religion and, from a very religious perspective, be very egocentric. The world revolves around me. So that means that if my roommate is annoying, God must want me to be with an annoying roommate. Yeah, there's an element of truth to it, but we take it too far. So even though you're saying it's childish, I think that on many levels, every person can spend his lifetime outgrowing that. You'll see when you're married. You'll come home and your wife's going to be upset and you're going to be sure you did something. And it could be a million other things happen, but you're not going to be open to that initially. And even after she starts telling you, no, you don't understand. I had a horrible day. The kids did this, that, and other thing. You're going to be sure she's upset because of you. It's going to be very hard to convince you that it's not because of you. So we don't fully outgrow this concept of being egocentric. It's very hard. That's one of the reasons we mentioned yesterday in the Parsha class. That's one of the reasons that we don't mention faults that certain people have in front of them. If you're going to talk about the dirty Jew, the example someone gave yesterday, so everyone's thinking you're talking about them. If you're going to talk about different faults, so right away people assume, oh, he's thinking about me. Everyone's thinking about me. You see, we automatically think it's us. So we don't fully outgrow it. The more mature we are, the more stable we are, the more we can overcome it, but we're spending a lifetime doing that.
Is there a way to outgrow it?
Yes. The giants of history were able to develop a true inner peace, a true connection with Hashem, where they were able to live their lives as a reflection of the question, what does Hashem want of me? And then, even when the outside world went against them, be it Ramchal, be it the Rambam, they were able to stand up to the tests of the times and succeed. And their self-identity was not contingent on the approval of others. Their self-confidence didn't stem from the approval of others. And so their whole relationship with the world stemmed from a place of balance and serenity. It takes giant people. We can aspire. I think the closer a person gets to a real connection to Hashem and to the Torah, the closer he gets to that level. But it's a lot of work. You know, we can conceptualize about it, but to get there is very hard.
I have a question. Would you say that individuals who maybe not thought in terms of what does Hashem want from me, or maybe they did, but they weren't like Torah giants or something, were able to achieve this? People such as Yair Stern, who gave his entire life, his entire mission for the cause of freeing Israel from the British Empire and imperialism in general, for an independent Jewish, the restoration of the Jewish country in order to usher in the era of the Messianic redemption?
I don't know specific examples, but I think that it is attainable from self-work and from a connection to Hashem that doesn't necessarily have to stem from being learned in Torah. I agree. Yeah.
Can I bring an example that maybe relates to this, I think, or at least in some way does, I think? Carl Jung, the psychologist, he had a vision, a night vision of being taken to the Kabbalistic wedding of Tiferet and Malkut by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who told him that he was doing something much bigger than he could ever do. So Carl Jung wrote about this in his writing. He'd never learned Torah before in play.
Interesting.
What's the narrative between Tiferet and Malkut?
I have no idea. I don't know these things. Yeah.
So going back to what you previously said, do you think that egoism can easily be misconstrued as insecurity or paranoia in adulthood? That it can transform from childhood egoism to being insecure as an adult, feeling vulnerable, feeling that it's not feeling like you need approval or feeling like you're being watched by other people is not a form of, it's not a manifestation of your ego, it's just being afraid, being fearful.
It's hard. It's hard to place a finger on it. again, to some degree, everyone lives, not everyone, but most people live with fear, with a desire for social acceptance. And you're saying, when it goes to the extreme, can we attribute it to a person not maturing out of his ego? I'm not sure. It's a little hard to say what's the cause and what's the effect. Right. Saying as I'm not sure.
But it's like wanting, I mean, feeling like you need to live within the certain constructs so that your community or your family builds. Is that ego? Is that ego?
I don't think so. I think most people do.
Right.
I think that that's how most people set up their lives.
Right.
It's rare that people make huge changes. You see, people work with the system they grew up in, and it's one of the difficulties that we face in education. People are walking in with the norms of their home, and now when you try telling them differently, they don't understand what you're talking about. I was giving a class this week about how Chazal, our sages, wanted us to view women as something cherished and not something that's free and easily attainable, but rather something that deserves a certain preparation, something, a relationship with a woman is something that is supposed to be something that takes preparation and a respectful approach. So we happened upon the halacha that Chazal say, if you see a girl and you think you'd be interested in meeting her, do it through a third party. Part of the way you show her respect is that you don't just walk over and say, hey, can I have your number? There should be some intermediary, which is a way of showing you value the other person.
How does that show?
That was exactly what they all said. Out of a full classroom, no one understood what I was talking about. They were all looking at me like, so I said, you know, if you'd want to date the Princess of Wales, would you go over and give her your number? Or would you say, she's an important person, obviously I have to find some venue to contact her? Would you just post on her Facebook page? Yeah, some people might. But I think that most people, if they were serious about a relationship with her, because they value her, so they would go about it in a more respectful way. And Chazal said, when we look at a Jewish girl, we're supposed to think of her as a princess. Kol kvuda bat melech pnima. The daughter of Israel is called the daughter of a king, and her valor, the approach Chazal wanted us to take to her is one of respect, where we don't just drop by her number. We don't take it for granted that I could just walk over and say, "Hi, my name is. Where are you from?"
What if someone that you know already that you want to date?
So I don't want to go on that tangent. I just brought it as an example that when people come from a certain perspective, you could try to explain something to them, and out of a whole class, I give up. I called the head of the yeshiva. I said, "You come try to explain it to them." I saw I wasn't getting anywhere after 15 minutes giving this example, that example. They all looked at me and said, "But why not?" So, okay, you see, people come from a certain setting and you try to explain to them something else. They have a very hard time even understanding what you're talking about. Yeah?
Maybe these answers are not, because it goes deep with all the stuff in the Torah and the Talmud, I guess, is that maybe it's the argument of old-fashioned versus present-day. I